the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 49 for April 17th, 2006.
Folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. I'm Dave Hamilton. I'm here with John Braun.
And hi, Dave.
How are you?
We like to keep the intro unpredictable.
We do like to keep the intro
unpredictable. It could be me or Dave or a child, or you just never know.
Yeah, we always seem to say the same thing in the intro, but that's I guess that's just the way it goes, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, let's get right to the geek.
Let's get right to the geek. Let me...
we'll do the gab later.
All right, there you go. So tonight's show is going to be basically a hodgepodge show. We've got a bunch of listener feedback from you folks about various topics that we've been discussing lately. We've got a couple of ongoing conversations, some new things to introduce. And the first is going to be Scott asking about swap files.
Mm-hmm. Hello, I was just listening to your podcast regarding swap files. And you guys didn't really explain it a whole lot, but you mentioned that you had 4 on your laptop and you said that was way too many. I have 7 on mine, and I don't know what they're for. B, I don't know how to get rid of them or if it's possible to get rid of them. And the thing that brought this about was, for some reason, my laptop, I've got a G3 iBook, old school. And I've noticed lately that I've been losing hard drive space, and I don't have any programs running that I can figure out. I can't find out where the space is going. But every time I turn it on, it goes from 3 gigabytes to 2.5 gigabytes to 1.8 gigabytes. And like I said, I don't have programs running. It's not backup that I can tell. And I cannot narrow down where this space is going from. So I'm wondering if you guys can give me any help, since you seem to know just about everything. All right. Thanks. And I hope to hear your question, or you can email.
No, we won't email you. We'll just answer the question here. And plus, we don't want to share your email address with the countless thousands out there, because we can answer the question. So you want to answer the question, John?
No.
Okay.
Well, you know, no, I was thinking, I mean, it sounds to me like there's just a boatload of swap files. Now, the thing I'm not sure about, and I was trying to research, from what I've seen, a reboot takes care of that nasty swap file problem.
Correct.
And that they all go away, but what I'm scratching my head over, and I wasn't able to come up with an answer immediately, is can you get rid of them while you're running? My instinct tells me that's probably not a great idea.
No, I wouldn't do that. The OS X uses virtual memory, and we've talked about this in depth in the past, and we'll sort of gloss over it here, but the idea is that the OS saves certain bits of data out to your hard drive when it needs to make more room in RAM for whatever applications you're running. And in theory, and this is a very oversimplification of the whole process, but essentially it takes stuff that's in RAM that it doesn't need, saves it out to the disk, and frees up RAM to load in stuff that it does need. The programs have no idea that this is happening necessarily. It's all managed by the operating system. So if you were to go and delete a swap file, you're definitely deleting something that the operating system is expecting to see. And honestly, I can't imagine that would even let you delete it. But if you could, it would probably crater everything in a nutshell. So no, you don't want to delete them, but try keeping either getting more RAM, but I think you might have the maximum there, Scott, for your particular machine. So if you can't get more RAM, try to actually ignore David Pogue's advice, which was to never quit anything. OS X's great. And actually quit things that you're not using. Let OS X sort of, purge itself. And it will. If your swap files bloat up and you quit things and leave it long enough, OS X will purge things down and sort of recompact.
And you can see that from our favorite
menu meters.
Or a number of other utilities. Actually, one I like that's a widget is, where is it? iStat Nano.
Really?
Yeah, it's a little widget, but it also shows wired, inactive, active, used, swap, free, all that fun stuff.
Okay.
That's a nice widget. We'll link to that.
Yeah, I'd never heard of that at all. And actually, I'll take this moment to jump onto two quick little tangents. John mentioned that we would link to that, which of course we will in the show notes. For those of you that may not be aware, we also have an enhanced feed for this show, meaning that the show is actually converted from its MP3 format that you might normally be getting it in into Apple's AAC format. And if you're listening on an iTunes-enabled computer or on an iPod, well, I guess the iPod links wouldn't matter. But on the iTunes-enabled computer, you actually get the links right at the moment that we say things. And Michael does a fantastic job of doing that. Happy birthday, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
So if you're the type of person that's listening at your computer, you may really appreciate the AAC feed. So go ahead and check that out.
Oh, you know, you said it won't do much good on your iPod. That's until they come out with the Wi-Fi wireless enabled iPod, where you just click on the link in the which is embedded in the AAC file.
Yeah, you got to give me
and
your
you just
test
go to
version.
That site.
You got to get me your test version of that back. I want to play.
Oh,
that
I wasn't
again.
Supposed to talk about. No, I'm just.
No,
I'm
we don't have one. Folks.
Wild speculation. Yeah. It sounds like something maybe someday. Though actually, yeah, probably not with the current one. Because
no,
you know, all the surfing stuff, a little tangent, but you know, like the phones and stuff like that. Ooh, you want to watch, you know, full motion video on a itty bitty screen?
I don't.
Do you?
I do, actually. I don't
really.
Mind. Yeah, it's fine.
Oh, okay.
It depending on the situation.
I don't.
You don't want to watch Lord of the Rings for the full cinematic experience, no. but to watch an episode of Weeds or something on the airplane, it's great. So,
okay.
Which is another great show. Great concept.
What's next?
Back to the swap file. Actually, very quickly, we've been talking about obviously boot camp with the whole Windows thing. Windows creates a swap file that is the size of the amount of RAM that you have. So if you go and create, if you're a boot camp type of person and you create a 5 gig partition on your MacBook Pro, say, and your MacBook Pro happens to have 2 gigs of RAM, instantly Windows will take up about 1.5 gigs, I think. And then your swap file will actually take up a whole nother 2 gigs of RAM. You can adjust that. Yeah. Which kind of stinks. And you may not need that much of a swap file. So you can actually go in and adjust the size of your swap file in Windows. And the easiest way to do it is to right-click on My Computer, go to Properties, go to Advanced, and click on Virtual Memory, and you can do it there. So that's all we're going to say about that.
Yeah, I think they use that file for Hibernate, this weird thing I've never seen on the Mac.
Well, they'll do that too, yeah. But I mean, they'll also use it for just the page file for swap. Yeah, pagefile.sys.
Yeah.
It'll be a monstrous file on the root drive of your or the root
All
of
that space just gets chomped.
Just gets chomped.
Yeah, I got my new notebook at work.
Oh, yeah?
Inspiron, yeah, we got to do a couple things. Inspiron 9400, 17-inch screen, very nice for a Windows machine.
They're going to come get you, you know. The listeners. No. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Looking at the list here, getting back to things, we will jump to, let's go back to something we talked about when we were going through the MacBook Pro and we noticed, or with the boot camp rather, we noticed that they repartition or the resize utility really seemed to kind of rock for lack of a more specific term. And I said I would be happy to buy it if I could, because it would be great to be able to non-destructively resize your volumes. Well, as it turns out, I already bought it. It's included in 10.4.6. The command line version of Disk Utility has been updated. And sure enough, you can do just about anything you want to with it within reason. And that includes non-destructively resizing your volume. You got to do it from the command line. You need to make sure you're typing things right. But there was an article over on MacGeekery.com where they talked about exactly how to do this. So
that's where I saw it.
Yep.
I had that wild speculation that this time was somewhat accurate.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, every now and then. Yeah, so
I don't know about the last one I had, but.
Well, you know, you can't be right all the time, can you?
But yeah, non-destructive. So that's
sweet. Yeah, you pay good money for that on the Windows side, and you just get it free with your Mac now, man. It's, you know, it's good stuff. And I can only imagine that the next version of Disk Utility will tap into this, or actually anyone could write a GUI interface for this. You'd want to really trust that particular shareware author before you ran it, but you know, but they could. I mean, if it's just, you know, all they're doing is tapping into the command line, not that difficult to do.
My position is still partitioning makes me nervous unless it's really necessary.
Absolutely.
Like if you're, you know, putting two OSs, but even in that case, what I do, the Mac is still pretty good handling booting from external drives,
yep.
And not really getting too upset if the hardware it's booting from is different. At least that's been my experience between the PowerBooks and the PowerMac.
Yep. Yeah.
Some things like the wireless, it may be like, oh, it's not here.
But
it's not going to grind to a halt or blue screen or something like that. Which,
right. Well, it will if you're running Windows. It'll happily blue screen running Windows.
It's been my experience, but
yeah. Does anyone know? Is it possible to run Boot Camp from a separate drive? Is it possible to run Windows from a FireWire partition? Can you do that?
I would assume so.
Yeah, I would too. But I mean, I don't know.
Well, no. Boot Camp would have to be on the I would think Boot Camp would have to be on your primary machine. But I'm sure you're. But I think your Windows partition could be on an external drive.
Right, that's what I meant, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know. Do you know?
Boot Camp on an external...
I meant them.
We know... Oh, them.
Yeah. Those people. There's
one
people
of them, one of them. At least one of them.
I mean,
must.
Had I actually...
Or has tried it.
Had I hit the record button, there would be people listening. But, of course, I haven't. Mm-hmm. So, we need to start over. Hey, so everybody... Everybody send in their birthday wishes, because one of us is having a birthday on Sunday, and I'll tell you, it's not me. But I'm not gonna name any names here or anything. Mm-hmm. But one of us is having a birthday on Sunday, and near as I remember, it's a fairly big one. I think it's
No,
it's not, huh?
Inconsequential.
That's right.
Moving
right along. Actually, you know, speaking of birthdays, I also want to say happy birthday to Jeff Stebla, the guy that co-wrote the theme song that you hear at the beginning and end of the show. Today is his birthday, April 17th. So happy birthday, Jeff. Hope this message finds you well.
Oh, and it's another special day.
It's Patriots Day.
Yeah, so some states get an extra day to send in their taxes.
Yeah, that's right. You actually get an extra day to send in your taxes, don't you, John?
I do? I don't think so.
Yeah, anybody sending to Andover, Massachusetts actually gets an extra day.
No, so. We send to
Tennessee.
Kansas or Kansas City, Montana, oddly enough.
You're sending there if you're getting
money back.
Or if you owe money. Okay,
yeah.
If you owe money, you have to, and you're in Connecticut, you had to file today. If you're getting money back, then you're filing to Andover, Mass, and you have until tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. That makes it easy.
Yeah. I only owed a little bit, but that's the way I want it.
Is it?
I don't want them to owe me all that money. Come on, interest-free loan?
Yeah, that's right.
It's already in bad enough shape. Oh, no. Can't talk about that big old deficit. Right? Or national debt.
Probably.
That's
not.
For the other podcasts.
That's for a different podcast. That's right.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them out there.
There are a lot of them out there. All right. We've actually had a lot of discussion about cable and DSL, and we're not going to rehash a whole lot of that. I do want to thank Ray Zeiss, of course, for participating in our interview last show.
Excellent.
Yeah, we did have a question about VoIP, and I'm going to find it here. Let's see, Ron writes in and says, I want to ask a question that's indirectly related to this topic of cable and DSL. I recently switched to a voice over IP service. He's using AT&T CallVantage, but this would apply to you folks running Vonage and all that as well. The service is good, sound quality is certainly adequate, and the price is most excellent. The downside is that the terminal adapter... the device that makes all this magic happen, essentially plugs your internet connection into a phone jack, connected between the cable modem and my airport base station is a bandwidth hog. I've done speed tests with the TA installed and removed. My bandwidth is reduced almost in half with the telephone adapter installed. Is there anything I can do to reduce the amount of bandwidth consumed by the TA? And being a Vonage user on this end, I definitely have the answer here. There's actually two things going on. One, the solution is to plug your airport base station directly into the cable modem and then plug the terminal adapter into the airport base station. The airport base station should be smart enough to route the traffic the right way and get you your data. The issue here is actually not that the terminal adapter is chewing up your bandwidth or using it in any way. In fact, it doesn't use it unless you are talking on the phone. And even then, it doesn't use a whole lot. What's going on is something called QoS, quality of service. And it seems like all these routers, these, you know, homebrew routers, or not homebrew, but consumer grade routers, either the telephone adapters that you get from Vonage or AT&T Call Vantage, or even the Linksys router that you buy at the store to, you know, manage your network and all that stuff, they do have a feature in there called quality of service, where you get to decide how much bandwidth to different services get different priorities. So if you're talking on the phone, that can get a very high priority over, say, FTP downloads or web browsing or sending mail or whatever, so that your phone conversation isn't chopped up because, you know, you're trying to download the latest version of, you know, MacObserver.com or whatever.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and I've run into this problem on my Linksys router here, most of these, you know, quote unquote cheap routers, the less expensive ones, the QoS, once you turn it on, your bandwidth, it won't let you go to the max of your bandwidth. I'm running a firmware on my Linksys router here from a company called SviaSoft, which lets you sort of manage a whole different set of options. And in turning on quality of service, I noticed that instantly my bandwidth dropped from a max of 8 megabits down to like 6 megabits down. And it wasn't that it was using it. It was just trying too darn hard to manage everything and couldn't give me enough bandwidth down. So that's most likely what's going on with your AT&T Call Vantage. So if you're any sort of VoIP, put your router first and then connect your telephone adapter to the router. Make sense, John?
Yes.
Oh, thank
quality,
you.
Quality of service.
Quality of service, yeah.
I wouldn't have thought of that. I was also thinking if the device was low speed, like,
yeah,
a 10 megabit thing, you don't want that.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, yeah. It probably, I mean, most of that stuff probably isn't 10 megabit, but, you know.
But some stuff's cheap.
But some stuff's cheap. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, probably if you have, you know, like I got the Linksys WRT54G, a big favorite with a lot of our listeners. And that has a light with 100,
that's
which
right.
Doesn't have gigabit because it's not gigabit, but.
Right.
Are you wired for gig? You're wired for gig, right?
In the house?
Yes.
No, I'm not. But you've got one of those switches there that you could bring me, and then I could be wired for gig.
Yeah, I should bring that.
Bring it up.
It's kind of pretty.
John's actually coming to visit us here in the backwoods of Durham, New Hampshire, in a couple of weeks. So we'll do a podcast local.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to take the horse from the train station, though, right?
Yeah, something like that.
All right.
Okay. Let's see. So we went through that. We'll stay on this cable and DSL topic. We had asked you folks to write in if you had something different than cable or DSL. And a couple of you wrote in, Tim from, I believe, Florida. Yeah. No, in Hawaii, actually, has service from a company called Clearwire at clearwire.com. And it's actually wireless broadband service. So you get, I'm presuming, based on what the research that I did, and there's a couple of these that are scattered throughout the country, most of the time it's microwave-based. So you have to have a clear line of sight to their adapter or to their point of presence, either at their shop or at some repeater along the way. And you essentially put a microwave antenna on your house and aim it out. And you can get, you know, a couple megabits a second at usually at best, and you know, certainly better than dial-up speeds for folks out in the boonies, you know, like me here. You can.
Oh, wait, though, Hawaii is totally separate boonies.
It is separate boonies.
The installation
yes.
guy's not going to drive out.
You don't think he's going to come here? I think I can get clear line of sight to Hawaii, right? The Earth is. We decided the Earth's flat, right? This whole round thing, you know, that was just sort
textbook.
Of a funny story, right?
Wow, so this is like a satellite. Yeah, it's satellite service. So your upstream is probably...
No, not satellite.
Like?
No, it's microwave. You're going to another point of presence on the planet. I couldn't see Maui from here. Yeah, it's microwave based.
Right.
Yeah, you don't want to get in the way of it. You know, it'll cook your brain.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Microwaves cook food
and brains.
Uh huh.
Right. Isn't that what we use to cook brains here?
No.
Okay. So yeah, no. A buddy of mine in Texas actually has it and works great. He likes the microwave stuff. All right, where are we going from here? You want to take a you want to talk about that raid question that came in? This is an interesting question that you liked. So Zgat wrote, and I'm not sure what this means, but anyway, I think I've read that OS X can make a RAID mirrored array out of two FireWire drives. Is this correct? Do you think this is a reasonable strategy for data reliability? This would hold backup copies of my photos, music, documents, etc. It wouldn't be my working disk. The situation here is, at home, I have a laptop or a mini, i.e. no internal disks, and hardware RAID arrays are expensive. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I think it'd give it a whirl. And that's a good thing that they include. I'm not sure if they include this in the Windows disk utility. Do they? I'm not sure.
No.
But if you go into disk utility inside your utilities folder and you click on some of the drives in the upper left, you'll see that you have a RAID choice. Now I'm looking here, volume format. Okay, there's a lot of things here. And then the RAID types. Now this is where I'm going to be a little fuzzy right here. Now it does
I'll
do the mirrored.
Yep, that's RAID 1, I believe, is mirrored, right?
Now, if I recall that, that's just spreading... Let me see. Or is that including data?
What do you mean?
Is that duplicating data? I'm trying to remember the RAID level.
RAID 1, if I'm not mistaken, is mirrored. Let's see, RAID level 1, I'm looking... Yes, is mirrored and duplexed. So you have... every drive contains all of the data. So you have duplicate copies of your data 100% of the time. Good redundancy. However, if you delete a file, it's over. It's deleted from both places at exactly the same time. So if you have a RAID array, a RAID 1 array mirrored, and one of the drives dies, you can simply plug the other drive in and you're good to go. Of course, you're not backed up. You're not... fault tolerant
okay.
anymore.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah. So I see these are a bit reversed. Okay. I'm sorry. All right. Now I'm here. RAID 1 mirror creates it on two separate disks. But yeah, as you're pointing out, it's a not a data. Well, it's a data integrity. So it's in two places at once.
Correct.
Now we have the other choice here. So we got the mirrored RAID set. Then we got the striped RAID set.
Yep.
And that splits data.
I believe that's RAID 3. If I'm not mistaken.
I see zero here is striped. Let's look here. No, three has a parity disk.
Correct.
So you're right.
That's right.
Three is the error correction, but if you're talking striped, it seems striped is just RAID 0.
Striped is RAID 0, and what striped means is that you've got your data spread out over multiple disks. So essentially what RAID 0 means is, let's say you want to have one volume that has, 2 terabytes of data on it. But you can't find a 2 terabyte hard disk. You could buy 4 500 gig hard disks and RAID 0 them or stripe them together. And when you were done, you would have one volume that your Mac would see. But really, it would be spread across these four drives. The problem with that is if one of the drives dies, all your data is, if not impossible, difficult to get to. So,
oops.
Yeah. So that's why I always kind of default to RAID 3 if you're going to do striping, because what RAID 3 does, it adds, you need one more disk than you would, so you need 5 disks for that particular setup. But one of those disks is what they call a parity disk, like John says. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that parity disk allows you to, if one of the drives dies, you can take that out, and by saying you have a parity disk, they actually all share parity. So if any one of the drives dies, you pull it out, replace it with another, and magically the data on that drive will be rebuilt from the parity data on the remaining 4 drives or however many you have. Right? Isn't that right?
Yeah. So it seems that the disk utility does not support that. So it supports
Okay. Yeah.
mirrored and striped, and then I see they have something... called a concatenated set, but they say it's not a true RAID type. So the Apple utility has a couple of things.
It must be just like Apple's own version of striping or something, perhaps.
Yeah, it doesn't sound that way, at least reading the help.
Oh, really? Oh,
every now and then the help is interesting.
Okay.
But actually, we're wondering from our listeners, what do you use for, I mean, there has to be something that does RAID 3 or above, so what do you use?
Yeah, that's right. I don't know if
it's ProSoft? I wonder if ProSoft.
I bet ProSoft has something. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
They got almost everything.
Yeah.
So, RAID is kind of neat because especially if you have a lot of, like, you know, and you know, most of us collect these over the years, we have all these little dinky little drives. As long as they're good, why not, you know, load them up in a case and then stitch them all into one bigger drive, if you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as you're not spending more on the cases than you are on just buying a, you know, monster drive and that's new and warrantied and all that good stuff. Right?
Yeah. So you heard that thing about Dell and Alienware?
Huh. Are we going to talk about it or are we just going to linger it out there and move on to something else?
Just kind of linger it.
Okay.
No, I just thought it was interesting that Dell, who is kind of yawn, is trying to get Alienware, who that's where you were talking about fancy cases that I was thinking about the Alienware.
Yeah.
So that's where that tangent came from, because I have seen a couple of those machines and they look like
They look cool.
Something a Mac person would probably enjoy.
Yeah.
Actually, I saw one that had a built-in camera and, you know, a ton of ports. It was loud and kind of heavy, but, you know, I'm okay with that.
All right.
Portable desktop.
Yeah.
Where else are we going?
I don't know. We can go back to the list. Should we do that?
What's on the list?
Simon actually wrote in and asked, I see my response here. I need to get to his question. He says, hi guys, I download video content for my fifth generation iPod using BitTorrent. We're going to assume that this is
BitTorrent.
This is content that you're allowed to download, but if it's not, well,
yes, because BitTorrent is neither good nor evil.
It is a technology. It's nothing more. That's right. It has been really slow. In fact, it's not working at all at the moment. I think it's due to my tinkering. I've heard some people talk about port forwarding for ADSL or cable to get your BitTorrents to download faster. Just wondering if you could explain how it works and how to set it up maybe on one of your shows. How about on this show? We can do it now. It fits into our whole cable discussion. It's absolutely doable. First, to understand what's going on, BitTorrent is a distributed system, right, John? And what happens is, there are often many people that have the entire version of whatever it is you want to download. And then other people will be in various stages of the download. Just because you have 50% of the download complete doesn't mean you have the first 50%. In fact, it almost certainly means you don't. You've got 50% of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And you can share the pieces you already have with other folks that don't have what you have. So it's this whole distributed thing, and you may download the last thing first and then something in the middle and then something at the beginning and fill in the gaps. And some other guy might have, you know, the first third and you know, the last third, but need something in the middle. And you've got that even though you don't have the whole thing. So you can share that with him. Yeah. And of course, all of that's managed magically, right?
But what's great is that it encourages you to share. Remember kindergarten? You know, remember some of the basic rules that you should, you know, carry with you throughout life. One is, it's good to share.
And so
BitTorrent enforces that. I'll let you.
No, you're right. It enforces it because if you're not sharing, when you connect to a peer, another person that's got data that you need, your client tells them, okay, yeah, I'm so and so, and I have downloaded this much and I've uploaded this much, and it sees if you've uploaded stuff, it'll actually send to you at a faster rate because it knows if it sends it to you, you'll send it to someone else and that distributes the load. If it sees that you're not uploading anything, then it will share with you at a trickle because
also known as leeching.
Right. So the idea is, so you want to do this. If you're using BitTorrent, you definitely want to share. And there's actually, I saw a thing today, and I don't have the link in front of me, but there was actually something that lets you download podcasts with BitTorrent and integrate them with iTunes, which is something a lot of people have been clamoring for.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. However, back to the matter at hand. a lot of times your firewall or your router isn't smart enough to make BitTorrent work, because people are just going to come and try to connect to you at random. And if your router doesn't know that you want to be connected to, it's just going to ignore the requests. So BitTorrent is running on, by default, BitTorrent is looking for connections to come in on ports 6881 through 6889. And you need to do this one of two ways. If you're using an airport base station, you can only do it one way, and you have to use something called port forwarding, meaning you need to go into your base station admin utility and tell it forward any requests from port 6881 to 6889 into your computer. And to do that, then you need to assign your computer a static IP, or just be certain that you know what your computer's IP is going to be when these people have come to try and get your stuff. Another cool, an alternate cool way of doing it that airport base stations don't support, but Linksys base stations do, is called port triggering. And what port triggering does is it tells your router, when a computer on my local network makes an outgoing connection on a specific port, then know that anything coming in on these other ports should be sent to that particular computer. So that way, if you got five Macs and you run BitTorrent on different computers at different times, it can really work to your advantage, because you don't need to go reconfigure your router each time. And that's port triggering. The cool thing is with port triggering is that 6881 is the trigger port. Actually, 6881 through 6889 are your trigger ports, and they're also your forward ports. So you just go in and set up port triggering that way. Linksys makes it really easy. And of course, you can get all of this information at, I think it's, what, portforwarding.com. Isn't that right? Isn't that the place? Isn't that the place where you just basically tell it what you want to do, you tell it what router you have, and magically the instructions appear? Right? I think that was something that Duffy sent to us.
Yeah. What port do you use for your BitTorrent client?
I use Tomato Torrent. It's port forward, not port forwarding. Portforward.com, for those of you taking notes.
I can't pronounce it.
Azorius or something?
Azorius? Yeah, something like that.
Could be, yeah.
And this lets you change that port, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And the connection settings,
Tomato Torrent does too. Yeah.
So you can make something like, here it's 55798 for whatever reason. I guess it's a nice high port. And as you were saying, yeah, in my Linksys, I have that mapped to the IP address that it hands out to this thing.
That's right. Yeah.
So when you share, others share back. It's a good thing.
It's a good thing. So yeah, like John was saying, you can depending on what client you're using, I think all of them actually support this, you can change those ports, the 6881. And if you've got five machines and you want them all connected to BitTorrent at the same time, then you need to pick different port ranges for each computer. Otherwise, your router's not going to know what to do. And then you don't do port triggering. You do static port mapping and all of that geeky stuff. So, what else do we have going on here? We got a couple of pieces of software that I wanted to talk about, you know. You all right with that?
No. Yeah, go.
You sure? Actually, there was a really cool website, humanclock.com. Did you check that out, man?
No.
Oh, go to it. Seriously, go right now. What these people have done, and you can submit. In fact, when you're here, John, we're going to have to just get really geeky for a second. We'll put on those cool t-shirts that Rick sent to us, and we'll make a picture of a certain time. And what humanclock.com has is, for every minute of the day, it's got at least one and oftentimes 10 different pictures of humans holding up, something that shows the time. And so you can kind of keep this little thing open on your desktop. And
I don't want to see these people. Well, maybe I do. Oh, wait. Okay. Yeah.
You all right there?
This is funny. All right.
So that's human clock.
Everybody gets their 15 minutes, right?
Well, no, they get their one minute. That's
minute.
Right. It's 1 minute of fame every day, though. So in 15 days in a row, now you've got your 15 minutes and then some. So, yeah. My wife pointed this out to me while she was working. So I'm not sure what that means, because she works for me. Huh. Well,
you paid her to
anyway.
Do this?
What's that? And Well, hey, yeah, she showed it to me and now I used it on the show, and that's not a bad thing. So I guess that's okay. Blue Coconut. Did you check out that app, John?
Blue Coconut?
Yes. Very cool.
You've got a lot of time.
Yeah. Well, this thing is very cool. If let's say you got a couple of Macs in your house and you like to use iTunes library sharing, where you can play the songs from the other Mac you have. But what happens if you want to pull that song onto the Mac that you're sitting on and manipulate it? You know, maybe put it in a playlist and maybe burn a CD or whatever. You own the song because it's on your other Mac. There's no reason you shouldn't be able to do this unless the RIAA gets their way. But you can't because, the RIAA has kind of already gotten their way. So Blue Coconut will let you do it. You install this software and then you've got like a little button that you hit and you say, copy this tune to my library, and bam, it does it. Great stuff. Just like it should.
Hmm. So, I'm going to have to hand in my resignation because I just got this email here.
Yeah.
You have won $27 million.
Oh, congratulations.
Mega Games Promotion Prize Award Department. I'm just so thrilled.
It's not even the son of the Egyptian prince, is it?
It was sent to Mac Geek Gab, so I guess we got to share it.
We both won.
So me and you are going to split it.
Good night, folks. No.
But I thought it would be really funny if they had $47 million, if you remember that figure from a Ren and Stimpy cartoon. Ren and Stimpy. Yes, we're going to put a link to that.
All right.
Kids, check it out. So it sounds like the band's trying to get in.
Oh, no. They're just grooving along there. It's fine.
Yeah.
I think they know what they're doing. Right? Yeah, they're just grooving along. One last thing. A couple of weeks ago, I wished for a way to individually tell Safari, I want to accept pop-ups from certain websites, but not others. And there's, no way in Safari to do that. But there's a cool piece of software called Safari Stand from Hitima.com. And it will let you do all kinds of things. One cool thing is actually a little sidebar that shows you, it's like at the tab bar, but it actually shows you little thumbnails of the web pages that your tabs are on. And then, of course, one of the other things that it lets you do is specifically allow various things from certain websites, including pop-ups, as you wish. Another thing it'll do is it'll let you set your user agent for specific websites. So if you want to go to, if you got to go somewhere and it says, oh, this only works with IE, a lot of times just by having Safari say, oh, no, it's okay, I am IE, a lot of stuff will work. Not everything, but a lot of stuff. And so you can say, look, yes, anytime I visit this URL, just make it seem like I'm not Safari and it'll work fine.
My coworkers who listen to this will get a chuckle out of that, but our internal intranet site, if you go to it with Safari, and it says it's Safari.
Yeah,
it's totally screwed up. If you enable the debug menu, we'll put a link to that in Safari, and then you make it IE6 on Windows.
Yep,
it renders perfectly.
Yep, and this thing will do that same thing for you. The Safari Stand will do that.
It's a conspiracy.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it's Mac. I'm gonna screw it up.
Yeah.
There's some evil IT person somewhere.
And
just
what?
Wringing their hands.
Yeah, well,
cackling gleefully. Okay,
I don't get it. I don't know why that why people do that, but silly developers. And I want to send a big thank you out to quite a few of you who wrote in with suggestions for comedy podcasts. I was ranting about that last week, saying I had no way of finding these shows. But Daniel Montopoli wins the prize. He was the one that pointed out to me that Penn Jillette has a daily radio show, which is converted into a podcast. They actually strip all the radio ads out and put in an ad just for the podcast. So you get, whatever it is, 40-something minutes of Penn Jillette raving in lunacy there in his studio. And it's great. That is exactly what I was looking for. I had no idea that it existed. I guess I would have found out about it from Amigo Fish, because just yesterday, Dave Slusher on his podcast, or just the other day, he actually mentioned the same thing, that he'd stumbled onto the show and loves it. So Amigo Fish. It's what we talked about last time. The cool way of finding podcasts. Did we not talk about it last time? I'm pretty sure I mentioned Amigo Fish. And maybe I didn't. Maybe I dreamt this. Okay, well, we'll take a second and talk about Amigo Fish. It's amigofish.com. You can register it for free. It's actually written entirely by Dave Slusher, the gentleman who produces and records evilgeniuschronicles.org. which is another great podcast, especially if you're into, you know, all the same stuff that we're all into. But Amigo Fish is the answer to, well, to anyone who doesn't have tens of thousands of listeners to query for what the best podcast is for them to listen to. So what you do is you go to Amigo Fish and you log in and you rate different podcasts. You just start going through and saying, oh yeah, I've listened to that one. I like it. I have 1 through 5 stars, or nope, not interested in it at all. And once you've rated, it only takes like 15 or 20 ratings. It starts suggesting podcasts to you based on other people who rated some of the things that you've rated similarly, and looking at their lists and saying, okay, yeah. So there's no top 10 list or anything like that out there, because frankly, top 10 doesn't matter.
You see.
You got it?
If you enjoyed this title, you may also enjoy others who enjoyed this title also enjoyed the following.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Makes total sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So the more people that use it, and I think, I mean, he's got quite a few listeners out there. Well, I guess they are listeners, subscribed. I mean, you know, many hundreds, if not thousands
readers,
of people.
Readers, not readers.
No, I think they're listeners. So many, many hundreds, if not thousands of people have already contributed to this. And you can take advantage of that and give something back. So it's that whole sharing theme. We've come full circle as I draw a circle on my desk here and whack my hand into the microphone. So that's how it goes. AmigoFish at AmigoFish.com. Right? It answers the question that Apple should be solving.
Yeah.
But hey.
It's warm out, so the band's not freezing.
No, the band's not freezing. Wow. There they are.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We got a minute or two here. We still have Gmail invites.
Boatload.
We have... we like audio comments. Gosh, there was one other audio comment I wanted to play, but I didn't. So we'll do that next week. Let's see what else we got here. Audio comments you can send to, of course, MacGeekGab@MacObserver.com. 206-666-GEEK. You can, which is 206-666-4335. You can Skype them into MacGeekGab. Or you can email us, of course, at MacGeekGab@MacObserver.com.
And you can also vote for us.
Yes, that's right. Oh,
Podcast Alley, iTunes, comments.
That's right.
The good, the bad, the ugly.
We're talking about movies now?
I was talking about comments.
Oh, comments. Yes, some of them are ugly.
But we don't want the bad or the ugly. Well, maybe the bad, but not the ugly. No
probably not. Our bandwidth and the place from where you downloaded this podcast, of course, is graciously provided by Cashfly Hosting. If you
thank
want to sponsor...
You, Cashfly.
Yes, thank you very much, Cashfly. You make all of our listeners' lives so much better because you can download this stuff at top speed. And if you turn off that quality of service in your router, you'll actually get top speed.
Well, the
circular reference. You got to
later.
What's that? Huh?
We'll tell you how to uncap the bandwidth.
Oh, no. We're not doing
that.
No, no. I don't know how to do that. If you want to sponsor this show, contact the Backbeat Media Podcast Network. Like John said, we appreciate iTunes comments and Podcast Alley votes. And I'm sure we appreciate other stuff, too, but I just don't have it on the list in front of me. We did miss that whole thing where we wanted to explain the show, so we'll do that next week, too.
If you're listening, you probably...
If you're listening this far through, you don't need us to explain the show to you.
Right.
Hey, man, happy birthday. Oh, wait.
Huh?
Happy birthday to someone.
We're all getting old.
Every day. You're only as old as you feel.
Every minute.
Don't get caught.